Okay, we're up to Simon Kufnun. It's mamash fascinating halachas. It's mamash so interesting halachas. All halachas based aknesses. It's really, really interesting. And this whole week, in the forthcoming week, we'll be discussing a lot of interesting halachas. Very, very nagia. We'll be talking about the famous tnai. The tnai. Why we're allowed to do various things in the shul. And why is it not lack of respect? We'll be talking about this tnai, this famous tnai that is made, this condition. That if you make a shul, you make it conditional, and therefore things are more lenient. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about sleeping in shul. We'll be talking about eating in shul. We'll be talking about talking dvarim b'teilim in shul. We'll be talking about building the way a shul should be built. We'll be talking about all those very many halachas. We'll be discussed in these forthcoming simonim. There was one very interesting bialach which I skipped last week, and I want to talk about it because it's a big chiddush. The bialach discussed the shaila, it's on the beginning of the simon, about building a shul, building a beis hakneses. And he asked the following question. He says, can a goy actually build a shul or not? Can a goy build a shul? Or maybe, because it's a holy building, it's got heilikat, it's got kedusha, maybe it should only be built by a yid.
There was a shira I used to learn on the Shabbos, and there was a whole thing about building houses on Shabbos, even if you use a non-Jewish contractor.
Contractor, yeah.
And the rabbi gave the shira, said, if you do have a Jew who builds a building, have, you know, Hashem Yirachem, that Jews aren't known for their building ability. It was clearly, from his side, it didn't seem like a problem.
No problem.
I thought it was mutter, but I remember being taken on a tour of the big Bell's Beis HaMedrash,
yeah,
in Yerushalayim. And I think the person who took me on the tour, who spoke English, I think he said that from a certain level, or certain parts, or I don't know if it was all of the big Beis HaMedrash, was only built by Jewish people.
Bell's Beis HaMedrash in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh.
I don't know if that's all of it or only from a certain
main parts. Yeah. What do you want to say?
I wonder if it means the building as a whole, parts of the building,
or inside the building. Rabbi Sai, let us see the words of the Bi'ur Halacha on page 60. It's the first Bi'ur Halacha on the seminar, it was the first one on the page. It says, Liv Nois, I'm a Bi'ur Kiyosef Shekosav. The Yesh Mishekosav, some Achonim write. They ain't live noise based on Knesset alide of the Gilulim. A shul should be built tafke through Yidden. Ubefrat and especially. Last is coming Kippol if nae echol noi. If there's any beautification, element of beautification, of making it particularly majestic and beautiful. Bevadai, certainly roi, it's appropriate. Leizoi, one should be careful. She alide isole, it should be done through Yidden. Yes. The Hakpoda is, ideally, a shul should be built by Yidden, whom we call Mokim, nevertheless, the Sakin Agag, when it comes to fixing the roof, shall be Saknesses of the shul, Alidei of the Gilulim, through Goyim and Elochush, it does not matter. But yes, the Bialoch says in the name of the Birke Yosef, that if possible at all, one should very much try and attempt to arrange that the shul should be built by Yidden. And it is true that, that some shuls are well known, or were well known, they were built by Yidden. I know of another, if I remember correctly, this is years ago, I remember that Yeshiva Tifrach, which is one of the best yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, Yeshiva Gdolis in Eretz Yisrael, Tifrach. I believe also there, the whole yeshiva was built by Yidden, I believe, and they certainly are kapot. I saw by the Achronim today a bit of a discussion, what does that mean that it's built by Yidden? What happens if the contractor is a Jewish company, but the workers are from Poland? Not that there's anything wrong from Polish workers, but I'm just saying that if they are non-Jewish workers, the contractor is a Jewish company, but the actual work is being done by Gentiles. Is that a problem or not? Or does it actually literally refer to the building work being done by the Yidden?
So, Mechaber and the Ramah, last time, seemed to say, if you don't have enough money to buy a shul, then build a shul, then rent a shul. So, certainly the Hakpoda there doesn't seem to apply.
Good.
And it doesn't seem, at the very least, it's not that offer. It's
good question. Very good.
But what about Chumras?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Chofetz Chaim writes in Avos Chesed, you're 100% right, and it potentially applies here as well. I think I'll agree with you.
that what happens if the Jewish workers are more expensive? Will this halacha still apply, yes or no? If the Jewish workers are more expensive, which is sometimes the case. So the Chofetz Chaim writes in Avos Chesed, he writes that if the Jewish workers are more expensive, then could be, if it's substantially more expensive, you don't have to go for the Yiddish workers. It won't have to be done by Yid. If it's a slight difference, then you should still go for the Yid. Now the question of course is going to be defined slight and defined substantial. I'm sure there's a certain percentage, certain threshold. I don't know if it's going to be 5%, 2%, 3%, I don't know. But there's going to be a certain percentage that if it is beyond that, you're right. You won't have to ask the Yid to do the work for you. You can ask a goy. Yeah.
I'd also suggest that in Hutz Lawrence, it might be easy to find.
Very good.
Who are plumbers and electricians.
Absolutely.
Only Yidden, plasterers and decorators and other absolutely places are needed. To
correct.
In the building.
Absolutely. So you're quite right that many poskim write that nowadays, if it's difficult, whether it's in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz La'aretz, if it's difficult to actually find Yiddish workers, contractors, then of course, if it has to be, it can be done by a goy and it's fine. This is all to be taken as a lechatchila, as an ideal situation. If it's possible, feasible, if it's not much more expensive, then one should attempt that a shul should be built by Yid. But I suppose often, maybe even more often than not, it's not the case. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're right. Ideally, one should always go to Babi. That's right. The Chofetz Chaim that I'm quoting is addressing that mitzvah that you're referring to.
Yeah. Partially,
that's a very interesting shayla, and the Achronim write about it over there. How come that, you're right, it was partially done by, you're quite right, and there's a reason for that, Al-Pi Musa, Al-Pi Ashkofa, Al-Pi Kabbalah, there's a reason why part of the Beis HaMikdash had to be done through Goyim. It's a topic on its own, you're right, as in Sefer Melachim Aleph, yeah. Okay, we are, we discussed yesterday, on Thursday, we discussed Sif Beis, which tells us the Halacha, that a shul should be the tallest and highest building of in the city. Now, I'm going to ask now a question which will be difficult for us to answer, actually. The question we're going to be asking now, and hopefully we'll get back to that shortly, is why are we not makpil on that nowadays? Why are we not makpil on that? So the halacha is that it should be the highest, tallest building in town. Now, I don't know many shuls which are the tallest buildings in town. I don't know. So I'm not going to answer that now. We'll see as to whether we are able to answer it or not after having completed this. Yeah?
I think we stopped doing that because the Goyim copied and they stopped.
Oh, it's very interesting because the Goyim copied and therefore their buildings are taller than ours. Yeah. But we should try to, let's try to outdo them. Why don't we try to outdo them? Now there is one particular place that I know this is the case. There's a very ancient Kela. Pardon? Yeah, it's going to be not there. So there's one particular place, it's an ancient Kela in Switzerland called Langnau Endingen. It's an ancient Kela, and over there, it used to be a Kela, we're going back centuries. It was in the years that the Yidden were only allowed to live in a certain area. They were not allowed in Zurich, and they're not in other cities in Switzerland. It's going back really more than a couple of centuries ago. And then the Yidden had to live in certain villages in the outskirts and there is one particular Kela that I know for a fact that in the mid-city, there's a shul is built there. And it's very interesting because what strikes is that in the middle of the city, it's a village, to this day there's a shul. I don't think it's in use anymore. There's an old age home there, but I don't think there's anything else besides that. What strikes me is that something that is quite famous, I believe, internationally, is that there is it's a very tall building and is in the front quite a tall tower kind of thing, and there is a clock, and that clock is an aleph base. It's an aleph base. The clock is an aleph flick, and that is a shul. The clue has got a tower in front, and it wasn't from the reform or from the assimilation at all. It was completely, totally from an orthodox, completely from shul. And the kela, it was mamash in the middle, the whole kela was a village, and in the middle there was that shul which had a tower, because the halacha is, as we learned now, the tallest building should be the should be the shul. And there was a clock there because people didn't have watches as we've got nowadays. And they certainly didn't have phones like we've got nowadays. So in order to know the time, you'd look at the clock in the shul. But it wasn't Aleph base. And he would, instead of saying 1, 2, 3, 4 till 12, he would say Aleph to Lid base. And that was the clock. So that's quite famous. But let us see, why is it taka that this is not the norm? It's the minority, and it's the exception to the norm rather than the norm. Let us carry on with Shulchan Aruch, and let's see if we've got an answer to that, which we may or may not. So we learned that about buildings which are made out of beauty. We spoke about a shard. Buildings which are created for their beauty as opposed to practical purpose, they are discounted. If you've got a roof which is slanty, and it's not, you can't use it at all. You've got a roof which is slanty and you therefore can't use it. So let's say you've got a residential house, and next to it you've got a shul. And that residential house happens to be a bit taller, or in fact taller, or not as tall as the shul, depends from where you start, because the roof is a slanty roof. Do you go according to the top of the slanty roof, the spitz, or do you go according to the lowest part? Slanty roof. If you go according to the top part, it's going to be taller than the shul, and it's going to be unacceptable. If it's according to the lower side, it's going to be fine because the shul is taller than that. How do you measure it? You go according to the place, the last place which is actually used, that you can actually use. If it's an attic and you can use it, then you go accordingly. If it's something that you can't actually use at all, they just made it slanty because of the rain or for whatever the reason may be, and you can't actually use the top part, then you don't count that. You don't count that. It depends if you can use the yod. If you can use it, then it shouldn't be higher than the shul. Says the Rama, on the extreme circumstance, sheish mitzvah malchus. There's a mitzvah of the government. If there's a governmental law, a regulation, that the shul cannot be so tall as we would like it to be, you're allowed to daven in that particular shul, although it's not the tallest building, although the shul hasn't been made as tall as it should be, you're still allowed to daven there. Although there's people living higher up than the shul. So what he's actually talking about specifically is that if you may even have potentially a shul which is underneath a living area. Imagine that there is a living area on top of a shul, and it may be offices or it may be residential flats. Can you live on top of a shul or not? So this is really a slightly different, but yet quite similar shaila. Because the whole idea comes from the fact that the shul needs to be the tallest. So in the highest building. So it's not only that, but it goes a level further than that as well. That you shouldn't have something on top. Not only on the side, but even more so, in a way, the Kal V'Chomer, that if there's a flat on top, you've got a problem. So we're learning now, the Rama says in Paskens Aloch Lemaise, that even if you've got literally, physically, on top, if it has to be, it has to be, and it's fine, you can still daven in that place, and you can actually live there as well, on the top as well. You could live there. But this is only if necessary. Now, we will... let us see Siv Gimel, and then we're going to address that shal. Mishik bia beiso yoisim beis haknes. If somebody made his house taller and higher than the shul. Yesh oimim, some say, shikofen oisil hashpil. Some say, you ask him to make his house smaller. So it's a bit like when somebody makes an extension without the, somebody makes an extension without the, pardon? Without planning permission, yeah. So they come within 30 days, you have to take it down. So it's not so distant really from that, that if somebody makes his house taller than the shul purposely and without any real reason for it, then he's got to make it smaller. Koifin oisa lashpilo, he must take it down. What about if he says, you know what, I can't be bothered taking my house down, it's too expensive, I've just spent 50,000 on this house, I don't mind, why don't we make the shul, we're going to make the shul a little bit taller. But instead of making an extension on top, let's take a big stick, a real big stick, metal bar and attach it to the shul and make it even higher than my house. And maybe I'm going to attach a flag to it as well. Does that work or not? Oh, only when you can use it. Well, I was talking about a slightly different scenario. I was talking about the case where, the other way around. If a yid lives in a residential house, when is it counted taller and not taller? Yeah, but you're saying that's the same halacha. Okay, I hear. So let's see what the Ramah says, because the Ramah addresses this. So he said that if the case I'm actually mentioning is the Mishnah Berurah, not the Ramah. Now, he says that if there is one place that, in one place the shul is higher, then it's fine. One place the shul is taller, that's fine. It doesn't have to be everything.
One place the house is bigger.
Then the Beis HaKnesses.
The house is only one.
Right, you're right, right. Mishnah Berurah's case is, you're right. Mishnah Berurah's case is, let us see this. One area of the Beis HaKnesses is taller. That's good enough. Only if there's a constructural addition to the shul. Only then it's fine. You go in Begag, the roof is higher, or Aliyah, there's an additional floor, an extension. Not like some people do. If they've built a massive extension to their own houses, and they want to sort out the shul, because otherwise they've got a problem. So, they go to the shul and they add a metal bar, pole to the shul. That's not good enough. You can't just have one, like make the shul taller, the tallest building, by having one pole going up. That's not acceptable. By the way, why is there another problem for doing that, which Mishnah Berurah doesn't mention at all? Imagine you've got a massive, beautiful house. You made an extension, you've got an additional two floors on top. You made a loft, and on top of the loft another, and then you've got on the shul has just gone now quite small next to it. The shul looks now quite. Now you feel really bad about this, and you don't want koifin oisoy lashpiloy. Rav send you a letter. You have 30 days to take down the loft, and now you feel really guilty about this. You want to sort that, and you go up and you make like the pole to the shul. You make like a long pole, like a metal thing, and you stretch it all the way another 2 inches higher than your building. So the Mishnah Berurah said that doesn't work because you're faking it, doesn't it? If you make an extension, an additional besmadej on top, that's fine. But if you're making just a metal bar sticking up, that's not good enough. Why is it not good enough? There's two reasons. One, because it's just not good enough. And another reason as well, why can't you just have a metal bar on top of the old shoe? No, you'd make it in a way that you could. Say you're making it. The Achronim say that is anyway something very, it would look, how would it look? Imagine that. On top of the shul is something sticking up. What would it look like? It would look like Chukis HaGoy. It would look a bit like Chukis HaGoy. It would look like a bit. It would look very, very goyish to have something sticking up from the. Because that's exactly what Tiflis do. So therefore, there's another reason. Anyway, you can't do it because Chukis HaGoy. But never mind that. It just doesn't work anyway. So we right. So now the Maisa, I want to address the Shaila, which Mishnah Berurah and Shulchan Aruch don't really solve. Why are we not makpid on that? I mean, not that I'm saying, why, we never heard anybody trying to, I mean, look the shuls around, look at the shuls around, all the shuls that you know. How many of those shuls are really tallest buildings around? How many do you know? Any? Yeah. It's going to cost a fortune. It's financially not feasible. Yeah?
I don't know if it's at all possible. But some rabbonim say, particularly in hostaris, you then should keep a fairly low profile.
Low profile.
It shouldn't be ostentatious. It shouldn't be.
But a nice svara, beautiful svara.
One rabbi say, for example, that one shouldn't have the most expensive model of the car. One should have.
Such a beautiful svara.
So maybe in the same way.
Such a nice point. A huge building.
The biggest in the town or village.
The eyes of the goyim will pop out. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I did not see this in any achronim, but my question is, I don't know why I didn't see this in any achronim, because this is such an amazing svara, such a beautiful point, sounds absolutely brilliant. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Yeah, but I didn't see this anywhere, but it sounds absolutely amazing. Yeah.
We don't have violence over the city. It's not our city, it's not really our problem. If a non-Jew decides to build a tall building, it's
Right.
Nothing to do with us at all.
Good. Okay, so I looked around a little bit in Achronim. The only svar which I found, which I really felt was a svar, which is, I mean, Achronim bring about five kind of svars to answer this question. Mishnah Berurah doesn't really speak about it so much. The only svar which I felt, which is really relevant to our kind of contemporary societies and kehilas, is that more than anything else, we need to worry about the locality of the shul. Interesting svara. That the Rabbonim and the Poskim nowadays, they say that more than anything else, I mean, imagine you'd have the funds even to make a tall building and a structure. But we have to be very, very choosy. We know what Edgeway is like, and whole North West London, in fact, whole North London is that. And most, wherever the Eden live, it's always extremely expensive, generally. And it's always quite difficult to find the right premises for the right price and the right kind of. So we could, even if you could, but it would probably be not in the right area. Even if the funding would be available, even if the house would be available, it wouldn't be probably around here, it would be further out. Now, if it's further out, he defeats, it's not good. The Poskim say that if you're gonna, it's essential that the shul should be central. It's essential that the shul should be in a central place that people can get hold. People should be able to go to shul, should walk to shul, should get hold, people to float in and float out, should go in to learn, and should go to, it should be accessible, it should be walking distance, should be geschmack, should be around. Because if it's not around, and it's gonna have a tall, massive, beautiful building, which is further out, it's not going to be good. So the Poskim say that it's really important to make the shul in a good area more than anything else. That's the svar. What do you think about that? Yeah? Makes sense, no? I think it makes sense. Yeah. 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 So you're saying that even that... Yeah. I imagine the answer has to do with finance. Yeah. Yeah. Building regulations, yeah, council regulation, building regulations, planning permission, all that. Yeah, I hear. Yeah.
Last 100 years, since Kaisho was Kaisho, Poskim didn't have the
I hear. The Maisa, what I did see is the contemporary Poskim, they ask about Eretz Yisrael. And that's all, it's Mamash Pele. And that's all, you don't see many shuls in Makbet. There are, I can think of a few shuls which are a bit taller than the rest. If you think about Chaniche and Mem Gimel, or you think about Hanof, a couple of shuls, they make a point of making it more majestic and more taller and taller. But the general, and it's that the Poskim really ask. The Poskim really ask, why Eretz Yisrael people are in Makbet? That's a very good question. So Chutzlo, you've got maybe more of a leeway, more of an understanding. And that's all for sure, the question remains, why is it? Why is it that, where is the Hakapodah? Why are people not so Makbet? Yeah. Yeah. So the Mishnah Berurah is going to say a little bit more. Actually, the Mishnah Berurah is not here. Mishnah Berurah is going to say later on that there is certain things that you shouldn't be mamash on top. It's later on. He's going to address it. The consensus is that certain things which are mamash considered, if necessary, you can have even a residential flat on top of the shul. It's fine. There's certain things which should be marked, but not to be have on top of the Ona Kodesh. So it's all part of the head that the Maaseh we do. It's not. Yeah. I imagine. I don't know if it's a straight out copy. Interesting svara. That's a really interesting svara. That since the goyim are makpe to do that now, maybe there's an element of chukas agoy. Interesting. That goes back into the shal of chukas agoy as to whether something which is intrinsically Yiddish a thing, and the goyim copy it. Yeah, so that's a shayla, it's a machloik as Rishonim, as the Vilna Gaon, and the Maharik, as well as something which was intrinsically a Yiddish a thing, and the goyim copied it, and they made it part of their belief, if there is a problem of chukas agoy in it or not.
So
there
are makpid on this, probably in the time of Shulchan Aruch also,
yeah.
Mentioned here, so.
Yeah. Yeah, but Shulchan Aruch was in Tzfas, so that could be there wasn't... Yeah. Okay, it's all very, 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 very interesting svaras. Okay, we move on. I wanted to point out over here something which I failed to mention on Thursday's shiur,
there's a halacha of kofim now here to buy a shul, to spend money towards a shul. The Mishnah Berurah points out over here that it's not just a shul and not just nevi'im uksuvim, it's also with regards to sforim. Mishnah Berurah Sifkoten Gimel says that is an obligation. I'm quoting Sifkoten Gimel. Achshem mechuyovim gam liknoi sifrei Talmud v'perushem lelamed boim liktanim legdoilim. It's an obligation on the community to spend money and to make it possible to learn in a shul, to learn in the Bes Medrash. It is an obligation to buy sforim in a shul to learn Torah, both for adults and for children alike. It's an obligation. Like there's an obligation to fund and make a shul. Similarly also, Sefer Torah, similarly also, Sforim to learn Torah. That is what the Mishnah Berurah paskens. And I saw Chassam Sofer writes in the Shuvah, Eilecho mitzvah rabon melam tzis Sforim. There's no greater, and he says in the Nusach, Eilecho mitzvah gdoilo, there's no greater mitzvah than to give money towards Sforim to be used in the shul. Interesting lotion, so I just wanted to fill that in as well, because I think it's an important addition as well. We learned today, Be'ezer Hashem Yisbach Shomer, about the obligation of having the shul, the tallest building around. We learned that buildings which are made out of for beauty are not counted. We learned that with regards to the slanty roof, we look at the place which is being used. We also learned that if it's difficult because of governmental reason, then but it's fine. You can even have a shul under a flat. And that's fine as well. And we also learned that if somebody who made his house taller than the shul, if possible, we ask him to take his the top floor down. We learned, however, that if he wants to make the shul taller, he can do that. If he wants to just add a stick, that's not acceptable. And we started off the shiur speaking about the lechatchila and the beautiful idea and if possible at all, the concept of having a shul built dafke by Yidden. And much more on these fascinating halachos tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem.